Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. The Samuel Adorsky Museum of Art at the State University of New York at New Paltz currently presents Anonymous, an exhibition of contemporary Tibetan art featuring over 50 works of painting, sculpture, installation, and video art by 27 artists living in Tibet and in diaspora. The show will be open through December 15th. The exhibition was curated by Rachel Pereira-Weingeist, senior advisor to the Shelley and Donald Rubin Foundation. The exhibition is largely drawn from the Rubins' private collection, and Rachel joins us now to tell us more. Rachel Pereira-Weingeist, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
How does this exhibition, Anonymous, come to be at the Dorsky Museum in New Paltz?
I work for Donald and Shelley Rubin in New York City, and the Rubins are the founders of the Rubin Museum. When I joined them over 7 years ago, I started working only on traditional Tibetan collections that they'd formed. The museum was about 1 year old at that point when I joined the Rubins and the foundation. And very quickly, we started looking at contemporary Tibetan art and adding it to the private collection. The contemporary Tibetan art was very new in general. Nobody had ever seen anything like it. It was the beginning of the transformation of the traditional techniques and appropriating the images of deities and using traditional styles in very new and innovative ways. So the contemporary collection grew very quickly, like all things in the Rubin collection, and we started considering showing the work and sharing it with a larger audience. We've put together a couple of traveling exhibitions. This is the largest. We did a contemporary Tibetan exhibition called Tradition Transformed at the Rubin Museum in 2010. This relationship with the Dorsky Museum happened over 2.5 years ago, and the Dorsky was very interested in the subject matter and willing to take some chances, not knowing at all what we would be exhibiting. A big component of the exhibit is video, and a lot of the video didn't exist. It was a response to an open global call for video. We got a lot of art the same way as well.
What are some of the videos like? Are they very different from each other?
They're very different depending on their origin. Many videos came from the Tibetan population in exile, and a handful of them came from within Tibet, from Lhasa. It depends on the equipment. It depends on how the video was transmitted to us. Mm-hmm. Almost everything was hand-delivered in the end. We found it impossible to use Dropbox or YouSendIt or any kind of mail coming from China. We weren't able to get any digital material mailed out of Tibet, so it was all hand-delivered. The content of the video varies from very short, poetic pieces to very, very long, repetitive motions that conjure images of an uncomfortable situation.
There are over 50 works of painting, sculpture, installation, and video by 27 artists, so some of the artists have more than one piece in the show.
Yes, that's true. We worked with an artist in the outback of Australia, one in Zurich, an artist in Oakland, California, many from Lhasa, many in the New York Queens population, one in Virginia. The population is quite spread out. Some of the artists were prolific and responded very quickly to the invitation to make pieces specifically around the theme of anonymity and identity within Tibetan culture. And some of the artists, of course, working in, you know, the photo medium or in video, were able to make more pieces. The artists who use very traditional skills, of course, take longer to produce their work and are often represented by one monumental piece.
The show, as you just mentioned, explores the tension between an ancient culture's artistic tradition and the personality-driven world of contemporary art. Could you tell us more about that idea, where that where that tension exists and how it's explored throughout the show?
Well, the idea for the show came about, again, over 2 years ago, anonymous contemporary Tibetan art. The Rubens collection that I was working with was all unattributed. All the traditional work had no artist name connected to it within our database. Some of the artists, of course, were known, but a lot of the names were lost over the years, and certainly there was no overt tradition, like in the West, of signing work with your name and signature on the front. Mm-hmm. So I was very interested in exploring these ideas of anonymity and how the evolution of the culture was taking place. I thought if I gave artists who had a lot to say and sometimes were self-censoring or were censored because of the locations where they resided, if I gave them the opportunity to work anonymously, that they would perhaps, you know, explore different ideas and different content. But it turned out that none of these artists could turn down the possibility of signing their work, and they all wanted to work in their very highly individualized styles, recognizable whether they signed their work or not. It was fascinating. So the 21st century mentality has, you know, completely taken over, and the artists couldn't pass up an opportunity to sign their work and to receive recognition around it.
You mentioned one of the artists was from Oakland, and that is Sharon Sherpa, who did a residency at New Paltz and created something on site. What did he create while he was there?
He created a piece out of found objects. It's something that he experimented with for the first time at the Vermont Studio Center. The Rubin Foundation has been funding artists of Himalayan descent to go to the Vermont Studio Center to spend 2 months in retreat, uninterrupted time to explore new ideas. And he created this piece first there and then recreated it at the Dorsky Museum in an exhibition space. It's a pretty unique Buddha head made of found objects, essentially of garbage. Of course, you know, from the traditional standpoint, this is quite a sacrilege to fill the Buddha's head full of miscellaneous objects. But it's an exploration that Tsering Sherpa has been working on for many years. He strongly believes that the traditions will not survive without these contemporary influences and this contemporary exploration. He wrote quite an incredible essay for the catalog called Bodhi in the Mirror, where he explores his own journey and his fears of changing, you know, nearly 2,000-year-old tradition.
The show opened on July 20th, and you mentioned you've been working on it for a few years. And I imagine you feel like by the time it opens, you sort of know everything. Does anything change once audience eyes start seeing the work in public? Do you learn more about it seeing it through the crowd that sees it at the museum?
Certainly. Every time I walk through an exhibition and hear the audience impressions or hear the impressions even of museum staff, you learn something new. You see something in a different way, and somebody draws attention to a small detail or a large detail. And, of course, contemporary events and things we hear in the news affect how you see everything. And, you know, we live in a fast-paced world where we're bombarded with news bites constantly. And when you are studying a culture from outside of the culture, like I have, you are constantly enlightened by new bits of information.
Tell us about a few of the other pieces in the show, please.
Some of the images that have captured the imagination of the audience that come to mind are Rabkar Wangchuk, who created a painting called Spiritual Mind and Modern Technology. It's a new painting created specifically for the exhibit. It's a very large Buddha head with an apple with a large bite taken out of it as the top knot, the symbol of enlightenment. There's traditional Tibetan clouds, the skyline of Manhattan, a circuit grid and all kinds of mechanics making up the Buddha's head and taxis running through it. Rob Carr lives in Queens. He was a monk for 20 years and was traditionally educated in sand painting and in traditional Tanka painting and Torma butter sculpture. His work has resonated with a very large audience. Another artist is Tenzin Rigdal, who's also from the Queens community. He created a monumental painting called Kriti. It's really a contemporary Guernica. Somebody who's new to the scene completely is Tulku Jamyang, who created a piece called Mandala, which is a photograph montage with hand-drawn calligraphy of Buddhist scripture. He's a reincarnated master. This is the very first piece he's ever created. He created a self-portrait, which there's no tradition for in Tibetan art. So using his own face and his own body as the backdrop for this scripture, all with a very playful title, Mandala, playing on the title of a mandala.
Mm-hmm.
He created another piece in the exhibit using incense to burn holes through rice paper, creating the outline of a Buddha's head. Within the outline of the head from behind, you see, again, traditional text, a message from a tulku who wrote a note, one of the only self-immolators who wrote a goodbye note, and the text of the note is in the piece that says, be kind to animals, love your neighbors, love your enemies. Very, very unusual method, very unique surface created by burning an infinite amount of holes through the rice paper to create this Buddha head.
You mentioned a moment ago there not being any tradition of self-portraiture in Tibetan art, but there were over 15 pieces of self-portraits submitted for the show. What do you think accounts for that evolution?
Well, again, I think the artists are starring in their own work,
mm-hmm.
and have learned from the West, certainly, 20th century pop styles are highly influential. The artists are experimenting using, their own bodies and their own faces. It's quite surprising, though, how many there are, and certainly it's the exact opposite of what I expected from offering artists an opportunity to be anonymous. They've taken, the opposite path. And many of them have created images that one would think would create some level of trouble for them, certainly within Lhasa, where many of them are working. And we don't know, what kind of chances they decided to take, and what, if any, repercussions there will be.
Anonymous Contemporary Tibetan Art is at the Dorsky Museum at the State University of New York at New Paltz through December 15th. Rachel, thank you very much for telling us more about the exhibition.
Thank you, Sarah. It was good to talk to you again.
Anonymous Contemporary Tibetan Art is on display at the Samuel Dorsky Museum of Art at the State University of New York at New Paltz through December 15th. Next week, the Samuel Dorsky Museum presents Tibetan Arts Week, a series of public programs and discussions with leading artists and scholars. To learn more, visit newpaltz.edu/museum. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.